Iran's president tells his Russian counterpart Tehran will give a more forceful response to any fresh Israeli attack on his country's interests. The United Nations says Israel's genocide in Gaza has killed 10,000 women so far, leaving 19,000 children orphaned. And Hamas says recent reports about Israel torturing Palestinian detainees reaffirms the regime's war crimes and genocide against the people of Gaza. Iran's president reiterates Tehran's position that it will give a more forceful response to any fresh Israeli attack against Iran's interests. Ebrahim Raisi made the remarks in a phone conversation with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. He hailed Russia's support for Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel. Raisi denounced the West's opposition to the attack and urged U.S. and its allies to stop supporting Israel's genocide in Gaza if they really want to de-escalate tensions. Putin, for his part, hailed Iran's move against Israel as the best possible response to its aggression against Iran's Syria embassy. He said that Iran is one of the pillars of regional security and stability and slammed destabilizing moves by the U.S. and its allies in the region. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister also called Tehran's military operation against Israel limited and a minimal response, reassuring in case of any further escalation by the regime that Israel will receive an immediate, decisive, and major blow. Hossein Emery Abdullahian made the remark in a phone conversation with his Japanese counterpart, Yoko Kamikawa. He said military bases and intelligence centers that were hit by Iran were used for the regime's recent airstrikes on Tehran's diplomatic mission in Damascus. Iran's top diplomat stressed attack on Israel was a punitive measure in the framework of Tehran's legitimate right to self-defense. For her part, Kamikawa reiterated her country's condemnation of the Israeli airstrikes on the consular section of Iran's embassy in Syria, saying any aggression on diplomatic premises is unacceptable. She also called on all parties to exercise restraint in a bid to avoid further tensions in West Asia. An Iranian official says all hypersonic missiles used in the country's recent retaliatory operation against Israel hit their targets with precision. Comment was made by Said Mushtaba Abtahi, the Secretary General of International Conference on Supporting the Palestinian Intifada. He said major world powers, including the U.S., the U.K., France, and Germany, helped Israel against Iran's retaliatory operation. Abtahi said they had defined 8 anti-missile defense zones in the region to thwart Iran's operation, but failed to do so. He noted, on the whole, 10 countries helped Israel during Iran's operation True Promise. Abtahi said Iran used ballistic and cruise missiles, as well as drones, to punish Israel for its attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria earlier this month. In the Iranian capital, Tehran, a group of university students gathered in front of the Jordanian embassy to condemn its government for assisting Israel to repel Iranian attacks against the regime.
We are here to condemn preventing the entry of Iranian drones into the airspace of Israel by Jordan.
Any kind of cooperation with the enemy by any country is legally considered complicity, and that is why we have gathered here to condemn providing assistance to the Israel regime.
Israel has tried to portray its army as an invincible force in the region. It has tried to send a message that no country can attack them, and if they do, Israel will crush them. But, as Brigadier General Salami said, we have now changed the rules of the game.
All these years, Jordan has helped Israel oppress the Palestinian people, but they should know that one day their own youth will not allow them to continue these crimes in cooperation with the Zionist regime. I want to tell Israel that their days of impunity are over. Israel, you have no right to bully anyone, not Palestine, not Iran, or any other nation. You can no longer make threats. You have no right to bully and you have no right to attack. If you do so, you will be destroyed.
Nations across the region have widely welcomed Iran's massive retaliatory operation against the Israeli regime. Our Turkey correspondent has spoken to people on the streets how they see Iran's unprecedented missile and drone attack against Israeli-occupied territories.
Iran had every right to do what they did, because any other country, if their embassy or consulate was flattened, they will have the same reaction. If Turkey's, any consulate or embassy for Turkey or any other country, I believe they would do the same. Iran had every right to do what they have done. If Israel to bomb any of Turkish consulates or embassies around the world, I believe Turkey will not be quiet about it, and they will do much, much more than what Iran has done.
I am absolutely against targeting other countries' consulate. I do not support the attack on Iran's consulate at all, and I tell Israel not to dare try something like this with Turkey, because we are the descendants of Ottomans, and our response will be very strong.
If Israel attacked Turkey's consulate, Turkey would not stand silent. Of course, the response would be strong, and that would be a legitimate response when another country attacks you.
This is seen as a conflict between two countries, but if someone attacked me, I have a legitimate right to respond. I want the end of Israel, but this seems like an unrealistic dream.
Iraqi people and leaders have hailed Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel, which came amid Tel Aviv regime's war on Gaza. They say attack was legitimate and within the rights to self-defense after failure of the international community to condemn the deadly Israeli airstrike on Iran's consulate. Muslim Salim reports out of Baghdad.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions.
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps.
The resistance and the people of Iraq surely stand by the Islamic Republic of Iran amid the failure of international community and the UN Security Council to condemn the Israeli attack on the Damascus consulate. Iran had all the rights to defend itself and respond with proper means and timing.
The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield in modern times. Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over, and Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
So now, moving on to Gaza, where more death and destruction has been reported on day 193 of Israel's genocidal war. At least 11 people, most of them children, are killed in an attack on the Al-Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza. 9 Palestinians lost their lives in a strike on a police vehicle in Gaza City, and 5 civilians were killed in the southern city of Rafah. Meanwhile, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says it's found unexploded 1,000-pound bombs inside of schools after Israel pulled its troops out of Khan Yunis. U.S.-Israeli genocidal campaigns claimed over 33,800 lives since October 7th. Most of the victims have been women and children. The Gaza health system has almost collapsed as hospitals have not been spared from Israel's attacks. The regime is also using famine as a weapon of war. Some 2 million Gazans are struggling to get access to food amid Israeli restrictions on the entry of humanitarian aid. Muti Abu Musaba joined us from the central city of Deir al-Balah.
The Israeli attacks and atrocities are still underway, unabated against the Palestinian civilians across all areas of Gaza Strip. Over the last hour, the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre against the Palestinian civilians in Al-Maghazi refugee camp. Several residential buildings were targeted directly, point blank, by the Israeli artillery, shelling at least 11 Palestinian civilians. From the women and the children were reportedly killed over the attack. In the meantime, thousands were injured. Many of them actually were critically injured over the attack. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces are still attacking Al-Nusayrat refugee camp with more plural air strikes that are still hitting the residential buildings there. More residential towers and Palestinian houses were completely or partially destroyed over the ceaseless Israeli air strikes and the artillery shelling that has been maintained for the sixth consecutive day. Till this moment, we are still hearing those explosions are still booming in that area. In the meantime, fierce clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces in that area. Let me say that when it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli occupation forces also carried out several attacks against the city.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has issued a statement in reaction to reports about the Israeli regime torturing dozens of Palestinian detainees before releasing them on Monday.
The horrific testimonies documented by a large number of Palestinians recently released by the Zionist occupation army, including children as young as 12 years old, which confirmed their exposure to various types of torture, ill-treatment and deprivation of health care, is an affirmation of the brutality of this criminal army and the violations it commits against defenseless civilians within the framework of war crimes and genocide against our people in the Gaza Strip.
Statement came after Gaza's Crossings Authority released testimonies of some 150 recently freed Palestinian detainees uncovering their painful ordeal during detention. It called on international human rights bodies to take action to reveal the fate of thousands of Palestinians kidnapped during the Israeli raids across Palestinian territories. The UN has announced that around 1.7 million Palestinians have faced forced displacement in the Gaza Strip since the Israeli genocide unfolded there in early October. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights spokeswoman said displaced Palestinians are living in terrifying conditions and under constant threat. Ravina Shamsadani noted that Israel's imposed illegal restrictions on the entry and distribution of humanitarian aid into Gaza. She demanded human rights organizations prioritize the improvement of the catastrophic situation in the war-torn territory. UN also warned about the impact of over 6 months of Israeli onslaught on women in particular. It reported that Israeli genocidal wars left over 10,000 women dead, including 6,000 mothers, also leaving over 19,000 children orphaned. UN investigators say Israel is blocking a probe into Hamas's October 7th operation against the regime by obstructing their access to witnesses of that attack. That's according to Navi Pillay, former UN rights chief who now chairs the probe team, which is also investigating Israel's genocidal onslaught on Gaza. Another investigator says Israel is not only not cooperating with them, but is actively obstructing their efforts to receive evidence from witnesses. Member of the inquiry team also said that some of the digital evidence of the incident has also disappeared from the internet. Fresh Israeli attacks in southern Lebanon have left a Hezbollah member dead. Meanwhile, the Lebanese resistance movement has attacked Israeli targets with suicide drones. We were earlier joined by our Beirut correspondent for your details.
We do have a member of Hezbollah that was killed as a result of the attack on Ain Abal in the drone attack against the vehicle. Of course, Hezbollah made it clear that they will not tolerate these attacks. They used Katyusha rockets to target Beit Hillel. Hezbollah was talking about the fact that they launched two different phases of kamikaze drones. They hit and targeted the defense, the rocket defense system. And they said in their statement that they did not only destroy the Iron Dome platform, but also they targeted the crew or the Israeli soldiers that are working in that area. And they have also confirmed that there are definitely human casualties among the Israeli soldiers. Scores of Israeli soldiers were either killed or wounded. Hezbollah also targeted the Shaba Farms post and a Kfar Shuba Hills post. They targeted Al Samaka in Kfar Shuba Hills, and they targeted the Zibdin post in the Shaba Farms. They said that they also hit and scored direct hits. Hezbollah also, like we said, declared that there is a martyr who is a member of Hezbollah that fell as a result of the attack. We also have several Israeli attacks against Shahabiyya, for example. Shahabiyya is also far away from the border. But in addition to that, we have the continuous Israeli raids and shelling against the towns of Al-Mashab, Bayt Ashab, Khiyam as well, but also Rashaya, Al-Fukhar, and Yarum. Those were areas that were targeted.
Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio. The Limelight.
In the United States, the Border Patrol chief has warned the migrant crisis is a national security threat and says his biggest fear is not the 1 million people apprehended so far this year, but the 140,000 known gotaways. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens has called the situation at the southern border with Mexico a national security threat, expressing concern about tens of thousands of migrants who have evaded apprehension and entered the United States surreptitiously over the past 5 months. Jason Owens said Border Patrol is closing in on recording 1 million apprehensions of migrants in between ports of entry along the U.S.-Mexico border in the 2024 fiscal year, which started last October. For the third consecutive year, his agency is on track to record 2 million apprehensions by the time the fiscal year ends at the end of September, Owens said. That number is a large number, but what's keeping me up at night is the 140,000 known gotaways. But Owens asked, why are they risking their lives and crossing in areas where we can't get to? Why are they hiding? What do they have to hide? And what are they bringing in? What is their intent? Where are they coming from? We simply don't know the answers to those questions. Those things, for us, are what represent the threat to our communities. The situation, Owens added, amounts to a national security threat. Border security is a big piece of national security, added, and if we don't know who is coming into our country and we don't know what their intent is, that is a threat, and they're exploiting a vulnerability that's on our border right now. However, Owens agreed that the vast majority of migrants coming into the United States border are good people. I think the migrants that we encounter that are turning themselves in, yes, I think they absolutely are, by and large, good people. I wish they would choose the right way to come into our country and not start off on the wrong foot by breaking our laws. While a very small amount of these apprehended at the southern border are serious criminals, such as those convicted of murder or other serious crimes, Owens said most migrants are surrendering themselves to border patrol agents to escape poverty or violence in their home countries. They're coming across because they're either fleeing terrible conditions or they're economic migrants looking for a better way of life, he said. Customs and Border Protection, the CBP statistics show a tiny fraction of migrants processed by Border Patrol have criminal records in the United States or other countries that share information with American officials. And an even smaller percentage have been convicted of serious crimes. Available data and studies also suggest that migrants in the United States illegally do not commit crimes at a higher rate than native-born Americans. Still, top law enforcement officials, including FBI Director Christopher Wray, have voiced concerns about criminal actors, including potential terrorists, exploiting the unprecedented levels of migration along the U.S. southern border with Mexico over the past 3 years. In both fiscal years, 2022 and 2023, Border Patrol reported over 2 million apprehensions of migrants who crossed the southern border illegally, both all-time highs. Jason Owens said the extraordinary flow of people into the United States is mainly driven by cartels. Asked if cartels were setting the rules of engagement at the southern border, Owens said, "Yes, they absolutely are." The New York Post has also covered this same story and tells us more. U.S. Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens said the migrant crisis has become a serious national security threat, as terrorists may be slipping across the border with Mexico and smugglers dictate the flow into the United States. They dictate what the flow is going to look like, and we respond to it, Owens said in an interview on CBS's Face the Nation. He said, "We try and get out in front of it and deny them the ability to use these areas. But at the end of the day, there's over 1,900 miles of border with Mexico." Under the Biden administration, the United States has endured record levels of migrants pouring across the southern border with Mexico, including thousands who claim asylum and are then released into the country. Border Patrol has reported 1,151,000 encounters at the southern border, according to the most recent tally of numbers through the 2024 fiscal year. The prior year saw 2,475,000 cases, according to the agency. Owens fretted that there could be terrorists and other dangerous people slipping through the system. "That number is a large number, but what's keeping me up at night is the 140,000 known gotaways. It's not part of that," he said, referring to the official count, "and that's just what we know. That is a national security threat. Border security is a big piece of national security, and if we don't know who is coming into our country and we don't know what their intent is, that is a threat. They're exploiting a vulnerability that's on our border right now. The border chief noted that most of the encounters are with individuals who are turning themselves in and are fleeing dire economic conditions at home. That doesn't make them bad people, it's just that they're not being respectful of the laws that we've established as a country, he said. Jason Owen stressed that there are dangerous people buried in that population that do pose a risk to the United States. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story. The US Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens has said the crisis at the southern border with Mexico is a national security threat that keeps him awake at night in a new interview during which he spelled out the danger posed by millions of illegal migrants who've entered the country in recent years. The US Border Patrol is mere days away from hitting 1 million apprehensions of migrants in fiscal year 2024, which began for the US government last October. What's keeping me at night awake is the 140,000 gotaways, Owen said. The number of migrants who have sneaked into the country undetected since last October. But he asked, what are they hiding? What do they have to hide? What are they bringing in? What is their intent? Where are they coming from? Owens explained are the primary concerns of the US Border Patrol about the gotaways, whose backgrounds and locations are virtually unknown to the US government. We simply don't know the answers to those questions. Those things for us are what represent a threat to our communities, he said. Jason Owens said his department is on track to record some 2 million apprehensions by the time the fiscal year ends in September. The US Border Patrol chief said border security is a big piece of national security and the illegal migrants being smuggled into the country are exploiting a vulnerability facing the nation at present time. He said migrants who've made their way into the United States this year have come from at least 160 different countries, some of which are many continents away. Routes from Europe and Asia lead to the Darien Gap in Panama, a popular starting point for smugglers leading large groups of migrants north through Central America and eventually into the United States.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Brother Ali and Sayyid Abdullah Musa. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So this series of the program Viewpoints is mainly concerned with an analysis on the important points addressed by the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. In this new series, we are concerned with the topic humans or human beings in the speeches of the leader of Islamic Republic of Iran. For today, we want to talk about an important topic, and that is the difference, or it's better to say the comparison, as it is between the Western democracy and the Islamic one, as the term that is coined as Mardum Salariye Dini.
You know, when we talk about democracy in the Western world, the first thing that comes to our mind is a secular political system.
Mm-hmm.
But when we are talking about Islam, this human dignity, you know, has come to the scene. But the case is that now where is the place of rationality in the we can say Islamic system or the system of values? So when we, from one side, if you are going to pay attention to obedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with his own system of values, but from the other side you have these human beings in the 21st century with his system of value and rationality at the top. So what are we going to do with the concept of rationality over here?
Yeah. So I think it's pure rationality that we see in the philosophy that Islam has actually defined for itself. Look, Islam says the values are absolute, not relative.
Okay.
It means that if something is bad, so it is bad forever. Mm-hmm. And if it is good, it is good and it has to be praised and respected. But in the other schools, as I said earlier, they just look at a social aspect of it. They say, for example, this might be bad in a society, committing such an action might be bad in a society, but as for me, as a person, I practice it. It's because I'm free.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, this is the difference. Yeah. When you have no limitation for you, but we have these limitations defined by whom? By the Creator.
Okay.
Let me give you an example. When a car actually is going to be given from a company to a person who has recently bought it, what happens? The car actually has been tuned based on some orders and some formulas, and so you cannot say that I can take this car everywhere.
So different parts are assembled by the factory and given to you as a car.
So the vehicle cannot be used in any way you like. The person
That's right.
who made this car knows how to actually put
assemble the parts
together, right?
Yes.
The car itself has no idea of what has been actually. So
the driver has no idea what's happening mechanically speaking inside the car. Okay.
So the one who has created you actually gave you a formula for your life, and he knows how to live very well in this world. So he is the creator. He knows as the person who made this person.
So now the question would be that, so this ideal system that you are talking about, Islamically speaking, might be practiced well at the time of its true practitioners, I mean, prophets and the infallible imams. But what about now?
So
I mean, the value system that you say can govern the people and has a system of values for the people in order to give them their roles and rights in the society must be, in a better sense, be practiced by its true practitioners. I mean, at the time of Prophet Muhammad and the infallible imams. So what about now? Because the type of...
Islam as a program has not been actually revealed for a certain period of time.
It has
been revealed for the whole mankind for in the course of history till the end of the day.
This is true. The value system is the same. But you know, extracting the new rules from that and adapting.
So even Islam is open in this sense.
Okay.
Look, up until the time of, for example, imams, those who were present, so they were the real interpreters of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of the qaiba and occultation of Imam alayhi salam, there is the solution of ijtihad is open, and the ijtihad is something which is. It's something which is dynamic and it is available every time. So those who are ruwat al-hadith, those who are interpreters of hadith from the language of Ahlul Bayt, those who are calling them general deputies of imam, they are eligible to interpret the hadith for the day that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
So they can easily actually interpret and give us the laws based on the Islamic values. And
also, can I add a point
to
that, though?
Yes,
now, what you mentioned is that you saying, okay, Islam is a system and needs someone to maintain it.
Yes.
So you kind of trying to imply the fact that we constantly need an imam or a prophet to maintain it.
Yes.
Now, with Islam, there are two sides to it. Now, there is the government side where you have, you know, Allah appoints the ma'sumeen or the infallibles or the governors of the system. But the system itself, it was made very clear to the followers of that system that you as a person has what we call wajibat, right? You have got compulsory actions that you need to abide by whether you have someone governing or not. So for example, now whether the imam is present or not, whether even the deputies are present or not, as a Muslim I have certain things. For example, you know, if we go by the Ten Commandments, thou I shall not kill, right?
Yes.
Thou shall not steal. These are set laws. I don't need an imam. I don't need someone to be in government to tell me this is my obligation.
Okay.
So Islam says you have certain obligations.
Okay.
Now, with other things, you might need to, you know, things to be explained to you and stuff like that. But the main things that when it comes to the rights of people, dealing with other people, they're already set, predefined, everyone knows them. That's right. Whether they it is an imam or not. So Islam itself, so you can say it's self-maintained.
Yes.
When it comes to the person himself. So now I know my duties.
Yeah.
Now sometimes, okay, we can say when it comes to matters of new affairs and things like that and how I should deal with them when, in terms of halal haram, maybe I have to refer to a marja, I have to refer to an imam.
Okay.
But the basics themselves, they are set.
So then
so for example, for example, if we do a comparison between Islam and the secular system or the countries that we have. For example, Islam from the beginning said there is no difference between a black man and a white man.
Yes.
From the beginning.
Yes.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala eliminate that kind of level between people.
Yes.
Now we still have that problem in the West, for example, black people and white people until today, the 21st century.
Yes.
So as a Muslim, back if I go back 1,000 years ago, my values are set in this kind of regard. So we don't constantly need that kind of government.
That's right.
Yes, it, as part of Islam needs that kind of government, but initially saying that as a person, me and you, our duties are set and clear.
Only for the new problems on Masa'il al-Mustahdath.
Exactly. So any Muslim, he knows that he should not kill, he should not take the rights of others, he should not steal. These are set.
But you see, we have so many problems in the Muslim lands because there are so many interpretations out of a same fixed value system among different schools of thoughts. You know, the problem is here that the in the West, in the secular system, as we call it, the democracy or the republic, the system of the law is replaced with the religious one, so the separated church and the state, okay? And that's the law that is ruling over the country. In the Muslim lands, in the Islamic schools of thought, now we have different interpretations out of the same system of the value. And still the people are not ruling over the people. I mean, people from the same classes. Still, there is a government because, politically speaking, the system of the government and these political, different political positions are coming from the Western political sciences. Mm. And then we want to annex or cling a kind of Islamic value system to that so they do not come together. Still, the people are not ruling over the people, as you see in the Persian Gulf. You know, in the Arab countries, there's still the aristocratic king system over there, ruling over the people, okay, in the Muslim lands. In Islamic Republic of Iran, we have this republic that everybody's vote is counted, okay? It's not like representative elect in the U.S. or something like that. The elites of the society decide for the people. But still, we have the problem of how to interpret this value system as close as possible to the pure Muhammadan Islam.
I think, I'm not sure if the brother agrees. I think you're mixing so many things together, with all due respect.
Yes.
You're putting so many things together, and I think you're drifting out of topic altogether. Now, when it comes to interpreting certain laws and certain values by Muslims, that's a topic by itself.
Okay.
Defining government and what a government should be.
So, as you said, Brother Abdullah,
that's a different topic.
Brother Sayyid Abdullah, as you said, Islam is self-sufficient.
Yeah. This is what I'm saying to you. This is what I'm trying to say to you. Is like, as a Muslim now, the main theme of Islam, the main lifestyle that is set, that is not something that me and you disagree on. For example, the brother has said in the Quran, whoever kills one soul, as if he killed entire humanity.
Yes.
That's not subject to interpretation. Everyone knows it. I should not kill.
Yes.
Now, when it comes to interpretation, people say, well, okay, the Quran says kill those who are non-Muslims, for example.
Yes.
And they interpret that in their own sense and they go blow themselves up.
The takfir ones.
Okay, that's takfir ones. Yes. Now, these guys, okay, they might have went through, away from the formula, but the formula itself is set. Mm-hmm. Now, these people who misinterpret, they're only misinterpreting for their own agenda.
Yes.
Not because there's a problem in the system itself to begin with.
Okay.
Now, I can misinterpret the Quran or the Hadith in any way I like to suit me.
Yes.
Not that there's something wrong with it. So the majority of the Muslims, they agree killing a person is wrong.
Yes.
Now, Daesh, no matter how, like 10,000, 15,000, 100,000 of them, compared to 1.6 billion, is nothing. So I can't disagree with the majority and take the minority. So even with being misinterpretation, I'm going to overlook it. But the theme itself is there.
Yeah, a brief comment on the Sayyid's explanation. A brief comment, I think. We have to go one step before your question. Mm-hmm. What do I mean? Look, we are defining the principles and fundamentals in Islam. But we are not talking about masadiq, or examples which are actually practical in Islam world.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't care, for example, in that Arab country, for example, due to hierarchy or due to their dynasty, the rule of that country has been actually given to a person. Mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
So what I'm saying, what Islam says. Islam.
No, I mean, brother.
And Islam defined, mind yeah. you, brother, yeah. cut you off. Yeah, yeah. Islam defined what a ruler should be. And he yeah. gave the characteristics yeah. and the virtues of a ruler.
Yeah.
Now, if the people choose a wrong ruler, or a ruler comes by power, mm-hmm. now me and you as Muslims, we are powerless to do anything yeah. about it. Especially okay. if these systems are supported by the West themselves.
Yeah. If he inherited, for example, from his dynasty, a kind of government, yeah. so it is not going to be necessarily a model, Islamic model. Islam has its own principles. And it has not changed from 14th century ago, and it has been defined by the Prophet and explained by the Imams.
So, because you talked about the Masadiq, these examples. Now, if in a Muslim land which is ruled by an Islamic system of value,
mm-hmm.
if there comes a problem about the rights of the people, what mm-hmm. is the problem? Where is the problem coming from? Claiming to have rule the country by a system of values which is rooted in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Is it so?
Yeah.
So, in comparison to the Western world, which have so many problems, I believe that. But as long as you are comparing yourself with them, and then you, as a Muslim land, have many problems.
We're not comparing ourselves.
Some people say, upon this conspiracy theory, these are all, you know, the plots against the Muslim lands, you know, the system of the governance coming from over there into the Muslim lands mixed with some Islamic themes and the concepts, and then rule over the people. But it's still, so many Muslim lands nowadays have crisis. Where do these problems come from, yeah, brother?
Actually, we're not, first of all, we are not actually comparing Islam to any other school, because it has al-Islam ya'lu wa la ya'la. Al-Islam, this is not good, sorry, delete it. Islam is high, and we're not comparing Islam to any other school. But rationally speaking, we are saying that, look, this is the formula that Islam has given us for the, system of government.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is not being observed in this country or the other, so lots of problems will arise. So the same way that they have selected their own government, they have to go and solve their problems.
So another way, you're saying, do not blame this Islamic system. Blame those who apply.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a problem in applying it, not in the system itself. So me as a ruler, I know that is my Islamic duties, but I decide to be a corrupt person and take the rights of other peoples. Now, someone from the outside, they can't come and blame Islam because I'm in a Muslim country, I'm a Muslim person, and say, okay, here's your ruler, here's Islam, you guys doing it wrong. Well, I am doing it wrong, not Islam.
Yeah,
I know. Even now in the West, when they point fingers at Islam, they measuring Islam by the people. You can't do that. You know how Imam Ali says, you know the people of the truth.
Yeah.
Vice versa. So now people say, well, okay, look at the Muslim countries. Well, I don't care about the Muslim countries. I don't care who rules the Muslim countries.
Yes.
They do not represent Islam.
Okay, that's right. Thank you very much for today's discussion. It was really nice. Sayyid Abdullah Musa, Brother Ali, we are out of time for today's discussion.
Thanks.
We have to cut it over here. Thank you very much. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this program. This is Viewpoints. I'm Attar, the host of this program. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst to stay? Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You guide me through my darkest night, shows me right from wrong, and the world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life, but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Iranian Radio.
Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
The Iranian Foreign Ministry has emphasized that any military action against the Islamic Republic will prompt further defensive measures. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Iran's foreign ministry reaffirmed its commitment to international laws but says the country will take further defensive measures in case of any military aggression against it. The Islamic Republic of Iran would not hesitate to take further necessary defensive measures to protect its legitimate interests against any act of military aggression or unlawful use of force, the foreign ministry said in a statement on Sunday, 14th of April. The statement added, Iran carried out a series of military strikes on Israeli military bases in exercise of the Islamic Republic's inherent right of self-defense, as recognized under Article 51 of the United Nations Charter. The statement added, the attacks were also a response to Israel's recurring military aggression, resulting in the killing of the Iranian military advisers in Syria, upon a request from its government, in particular the regime's recent armed attack against Iran's diplomatic premises in the Syrian capital, Damascus. The statement reiterated Iran's adherence to the purposes and principles of the United Nations Charter and to international laws. Tehran, however, is resolute on forcefully defending its sovereignty, territorial integrity, and national interests against any unlawful use of force and aggression, the foreign ministry emphasized. The statement added, the Islamic Republic of Iran's resort to defensive measures in exercise of its right of self-defense demonstrates Iran's responsible approach towards regional and international peace and security. The foreign ministry emphasized that Iran feels responsible towards regional and global peace and security at a time when the occupying Israeli regime has engaged in genocidal campaign against the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip, with repeated military aggression against neighboring countries, and fanning the flames of war across the region. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, launched extensive missile and drone strikes against the occupied Palestinian territories late on Saturday, 13th of April, in response to Israel's missile attack on a consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Syria, on 1st of April. Iran hit a large intelligence base in the occupied Palestinian lands and Israel's Nevatim airbase, from where an F-35 jet took off to target Iran's consulate building in Damascus. A senior commander of the IRGC Quds Force, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, and his deputy general, Muhammad Hadi Haji Rahimi were among the 7 Iranian martyrs of the deadly Israeli attack on the consulate building in Damascus. Meanwhile, Iran's United Nations ambassador, Amir Saeed Iravani, has warned the United States against initiating military action against the country in the aftermath of the Islamic Republic's recent legitimate retaliatory operation against the Israeli regime, Washington's most trusted ally. Iran has no intention of engaging in conflict with the United States in the region, Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations, Amir Saeed Iravani, told a UN Security Council meeting on Sunday, 14th of April. Iravani added, however, if the US initiates military operations against Iran, Iranian citizens, or Iran's security and interests, Iran will certainly use its inherent right to respond proportionately. On 1st of April, the Israeli regime committed a terrorist attack against Iran's diplomatic premises in the Syrian capital Damascus. The Israeli attack resulted in the martyrdom of Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, as well as his deputy, General Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi, and 5 other accompanying IRGC officers. Retaliating against the attack, the IRGC targeted the occupied territories late on Saturday, 13th of April, with a barrage of drones and missiles. The retaliatory attack, codenamed Operation True Promise, has inflicted damage on Israeli military bases across the occupied Palestinian territories. Also, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has hailed the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps IRGC's retaliatory attack on the Israeli occupied territories, saying the hybrid operation taught the Israeli regime an unforgettable lesson. In a statement on Sunday, 14th of April, President Ebrahim Raisi said, the drone and missile strikes turned a new chapter in the history of Iran's authority and materialized the sincere promise of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, to punish the aggressor. President Raisi said, last night, our zealous and courageous children in the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, with the cooperation and coordination of all the defense and political sectors of the country, turned a new page in the history of Iran's authority and taught an unforgettable lesson to the Zionist regime. President Raisi highlighted the powerful impact of the mission conveying a resolute message of authority and deterrence to the Islamic community, while instilling fear and humiliation among the adversaries of humanity and of the Islamic Republic. He further noted that during the last 6 months, and especially in the last 10 days, Iran has emphasized the dangers of the United Nations Security Council's inaction regarding violations by the Zionist regime, particularly in the Gaza Strip. But despite efforts, the Security Council's response has been impeded by the influence of the United States and other backers of the Zionist regime. Turkey's TRT World has also covered this story and tells us more. Iran initiated retaliatory strikes against Israel late on Saturday, 13th of April, deploying over 200 drones and missiles in the attack. The Iranian retaliation was triggered by an Israeli airstrike in Syria, which claimed the lives of prominent Iranian generals. The barrage of drones and missiles marks the first instance of Iran launching an attack directly from its own territory against the Israeli regime. The attack has sparked concerns among those who fear that Israel's potential response against Iran could trigger yet another escalation in an already volatile region. Iran's top military general says a message has been sent to the United States through Switzerland, warning against colluding with Israel in its possible offensive against Iran. Top Iranian General Mohammad Bagheri, the chief of the general staff of Iran's armed forces, told reporters in Tehran that Washington has been informed if it gets together with Israel in its possible further military action against Iran, then the American bases in the region will not be safe. U.S. President Joe Biden has reportedly told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a telephone call that the United States will not support any Israeli counterattack against Iran, according to senior White House officials. According to a CNN report, a senior Biden administration official disclosed on Sunday, 14th of April, that Joe Biden conveyed to Benjamin Netanyahu during a phone call on Saturday that the U.S. will not engage in offensive operations against Iran. The Iranian president, Said Ebrahim Raisi, warned Israel and its allies against any reckless action after Tehran's drone and missile attack in retaliation for a deadly strike on its consulate building in Damascus. President Raisi said, if the Zionist regime or its supporters demonstrate reckless behavior, they will receive a decisive and much stronger response. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also reported on the same story. Iran said on Sunday, 14th of April, that it won't hesitate in taking further defensive measures to protect its legitimate interests against any aggressive military actions. The Iranian Foreign Ministry reaffirmed its adherence to the principles and objectives of the United Nations Charter and to international laws, according to a report by the Mehr news agency. The Foreign Ministry reiterated Iran's determination to decisively defend its sovereignty, its territorial integrity and national interests against any illegal order of use of force and aggression. It also stressed that Tehran's resort to defensive measures in exercising its right to self-defense shows the responsible approach taken by Iran towards regional and international peace and security. The statement added, if necessary, we will not hesitate to take further defensive measures to protect Iranian legitimate interests against any aggressive military actions and illegal use of force. Iran began an airborne attack on Saturday, 13th of April, against Israel in retaliation for a 1st of April airstrike on its diplomatic facility in the Syrian capital, Damascus. The airstrike killed at least 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, including 2 top Iranian generals. Tehran has accused the Israeli regime of carrying out the airstrike on its consulate building in Damascus and has vowed to respond.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.